right. Before we get into this week's episode, I really thought I wasn't going to get into my weekly rant, but I have to do it. So I'm going to tell a story before we get into it. So growing up, my mom and my dad said, don't hang around losers. Even better, don't hang around losers who think they are winners. So I think you know where I'm going with this. So every week, every major tournament, we keep on going through the same Alan Donald horror film. And even worse, I'm gonna call it out. The pro tiers are bona fide losers. If you're a coach, a father, a mother, or anybody who has any child who loves cricket, please do not let your child watch the pro tiers. They can watch any other country. I'd rather soon they back Afghanistan. At least they got something going on. And my rant even goes even worse. I'm going to talk about these so-called South African greats who are empty stat padders. Yes, I had to say it out loud. Jacques Carlos, for the so-called greatest all-rounder of all time, what has he actually won? Give me a Wasim Akram. I'm going to talk about that. Hold on. Give me Rahul Dravid. Give me Sachin Tendulkar. Give me Adam Gilchrist. Ricky Ponting. Because we've got to hold South African cricket to a real standard, or a standard that we do for every other team sport. You've got to win at the highest level. So, guys, don't hang around losers because it seeps into your DNA. Because all we talk about with the pro tiers is coulda, woulda, shoulda. This guy's so good. Never team wins. And I didn't want to start the show off like this, but I had to get it off my system. It was my journalistic right to talk about this. But talking about winners, let me start off with Kaizer Chiefs. We did it. I know a lot of people didn't think that we could. I know Ben on my left was like, you probably out of here. Shout out to my team. I know I gave you a hard issues last week, but we're here. We're here now, and I'm manifesting it. We're playing Skukune. Don't worry about that team for Pretoria. Outside of that, yes, I always have to do it. Musa Wenkosi, punctual Shanga, say congratulations to Pirates by hook or by crook. You are there. You will be playing whoever else is in that second leg. Like I said, nobody really cares about that. But moving on, we've got to talk about what happened yesterday. Ben, we almost, pushed past it. There was a lot of banter that was happening in studio when we were shooting. Liverpool fans, funny how life comes at you so quickly. I thought you guys were going to double up and going to win the Champions League as well. So I'm glad that football has humbled you once again. Ben, me and you have peace also this week. Bruno Fernandes, we thank you for a set piece. You could have done more, but we will take the points in our relegation battle. We're almost at 40. And Arsenal are almost confirmed at blowing another league and having another trophy-less season. That gives me all the joy. But this week, episode 39, we have a Diski, legend, midfield maestro. We have Mark Haskins in studio. And before I hand over to him.
I'm so inflamed by the short callousing. I'm sitting here smoldering. I'm giving you your time.
That's another episode.
You know, you said that, and I'm like, dude, let's respect, because you may say greatest all-rounder, but I watched, I think it was Ricky Ponting.
Yes.
Actually proclaiming the greatest cricketer of all time.
Yes.
Stat padding. No, I told it, emptyless stats. We're not going to get into that.
You went pro tier stats padding. You could have named 100 people. You go to the GOAT.
I said
you got to work on your intros.
Anyway, I said what I said, and I back it. I double down.
You say what you said, and you should ever be judged upon it. Mark, thanks for being in studio today. Let's not start on a bad note. I'm trying to become more patient as a human. We're going to work past that. We'll talk afterwards.
Yes, let's do that.
Lovely to have you in studio. I've been looking forward to this because, in my mind, you feel like the Herschel Gibbs of local football. You could have gone for other sports. You chose this one. Prolific. You're still young. You're still youthful. Still doing so much.
Yeah, I guess sport is in my DNA. Like my mom was a sprinter. She was a hockey player. My dad was a footballer. My family, I come from a sporting family. You speak about cricket. My aunt, I have an aunt who
speaks badly about cricket.
She loves cricket. And she could literally take you to school when it comes to cricket.
Okay.
And she's a dressmaker, by the way. But you know, when we play 30 seconds, anything like that, when there's a cricket question, we turn to her.
Shout out.
She's that kind of person. But my family as a whole, my uncle was a coach. He actually coached Shoes Mushweyo at some point. But, you know, they grew up in an era where, you know, their sporting abilities didn't really allow them to make a career of it or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I come from sports, and sports is my life. And I ended up being a footballer. But yes, I played just about everything I could. I tried. I even played badminton at school.
Shout out to badminton.
So
right
I
there.
Pretty much did everything I could. I went to school to play sport, pretty much.
Yeah, most of us did. If we're really honest with ourselves, most of us did.
Mark, before we get into Ben, let's talk about that gold moment before I get into my long-winded stuff.
Yeah.
I wanted to say Kaiser Chiefs, but I know you're gonna fight me on
no,
it.
No, I mean, I'm not gonna fight you, although you are drawing swords with me today already. Jesus, there's certain things you don't go on. Yeah, you take on colours, you are gonna get the wrath. But let's move on.
Yeah.
I think the clip trip that's gold moment for last week has to be, and because I took a lot of stick around this, I think going into this, the clip trip that gold moment for last week has to be France 42, Ireland a flattering 27. France were like, you guys injured De Ponts, we've beaten you. Have a few tries in the end, otherwise your fans are going to start rioting. It was such a huge win.
Yeah.
Monstrous statement performance. Yeah, they're going to win the Six Nations.
Whoa, let's not double down on that, but I'm going to use a word that I haven't used in a while. They were clinical. They were absolutely spectacular, and I will put my sword down as well and say, Ben, you were right. You called us early. It's going to be a photo finish to the end. And yeah, let's see what happens next to the Six Nations.
Yeah, we'll get down to why it's a photo finish potentially at the end in our last part of the show, because mathematically there's still three teams that could win this. But let's forget maths. This is a sports show. France are going to win.
They play Italy, don't they?
Ireland play Italy in the last one. England play Wales away. And in the last game, France at home to Scotland.
Scotland. Yeah.
That's going to be interesting.
But like, I mean, sure, I mean, let's have it. Do you reckon Kaiser Chiefs winning in the Nedbank Cup is going to be bigger than France dismantling
Wait,
Ireland?
Hold on. If Kaiser Chiefs lift a trophy, I owe a lot of people. I owe a lot. Don't just laugh at that. There's still a possibility. We still got to play 90 minutes of football. But I think that'll be that's gold moment for the year. And I'll double down on that.
Not fair. Have it.
Okay, cool, guys. We've done all of the banter. We're going to get back into Mark's career, the PSL, and everything about local football. After the break, guys, episode 39, The Football Show. Cool, guys. Welcome back to On The Bounce, episode 39. Like we said, and all my banter aside, we've got a legend of Diski in it. You know, me and Ben have been talking about local football at such a high level, but we wanted to get somebody who's there behind the scenes who's done everything. Mark, I've got to ask you. Everybody, their son, their daughter, their family thinks they can be a pro. What? How did you know that you were that good and you were better than everybody else at Diski? Like, that's what everybody wants to know, and me specifically.
So the funny thing about that is I was offered my first pro contract when I was 17. But I was grade 11, standard 9, form 4, whatever you want to call it back in the day. But my parents, like, just shut it down. They're like, no. And I can't fault them because, like I said, I went to school to play sports. So I was not academically inclined in any way. Even though, you know, when I did apply myself, I actually did quite well. But, like, I would go to school, come home, put my bag down, and I'll pick it up where I left it tomorrow. I didn't bother with my books. A lot of my books were empty. And when I look back, it's a regret. It's something that I, you know, I should have applied myself and been more, you know, well-rounded, apply myself academically as well as on the sports field. But I think my parents, you know, they knew if I were to turn pro in grade 11, I probably wouldn't have matriculated. Oof. So I understand it, but they really wanted me to go to the US go and study in the US. So I didn't. We turned down the contract. Kept playing, I guess, junior football, under 19 football. And when I graduated, we'd applied to universities in the U.S. And so I got a scholarship, went to Florida Atlantic University, Boca Raton. And so that was my 1 year that I spent in the U.S. So I only stayed for a year because, unfortunately, what I did at high school followed me to varsity. And I went to training. I barely went to class
Hector.
At varsity. So, again, when I look back at it, I should have applied myself a lot more. It was a great opportunity, and maybe I did take it for granted. But yeah, I only spent a year in the US, and then, but I always wanted to come, I always wanted to turn pro. And a big decision in that was also that the Olympic team, so my generation, 81, 82, we would have played, what was it, the 2004 Olympics.
Yeah.
Was our year. I would be 23 in the 2004 Olympics. And so I wanted to make the Olympic team. That was one of my dreams. And so I spent the year there. Didn't quite work out. I basically flunked out.
Yeah.
So then when I came back, I was at Cosmos prior to leaving.
Yeah.
So then I went straight back to Cosmos, signed a contract. And that's, so instead of starting at 17, I then signed my contract at 20.
So I wanted to ask, because, and I'm going to jump around a little bit here, Mark, though, please forgive me. We've got the 16-year-old sensation at Cape Town City now. he's gone pro, Witboy, and, you know, I've spoken about it and asked around. They say he's super special. Do you have an opinion about somebody starting so young to play at such a high level? Do you think he should be going through, I know I'm putting you on the spot, do you think he should, you know, grow into his body? He's a 16-year-old child. I'd like to say that I'm 35. Or do you think he's that special that we should just allow the guy to play?
Yeah, no, I've watched him, and he's a generational talent.
Oof.
He is, he's a phenomenal footballer. He played last year in the Bay Hill, which is one of our most prestigious youth tournaments. Yeah. I played it when I was young.
Yeah.
It's been around for a long time. He was 15 at the time. It's an under-19 tournament. He got player of the tournament. And that tells you, I mean, at 15, playing against 19-year-olds, physically, they're a lot bigger, stronger, whatever the case, didn't matter. He dominated. I mean, everybody was afraid of coming up against him. He's really good. He is a special player. I have no gripes, because football, as much as it is a contact sport, it's not a rugby or, you know, American football where you actually go in and you get hit. So the refs are there to protect you. And so, definitely if you're good enough, you're old enough. That's the rule in football.
I always think to myself, cool, on the field is one thing, but you're hanging around grown men. Okay. So now all of a sudden you've gone from being a child to essentially now you're like a professional, right? You're fully grown. Do you think, I mean, is that an area that gets focused on as well? I mean, how sheltered does the kid get socially? Because let's be honest, locker room conversations for grown men is very different to where you are in high school.
Yep.
So now you're very impressionable. Now you could get certain influences. Money is now, even though you're not making it, you know what it is because you're seeing it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that the clubs focus enough on that, just because you can manage a guy's workload on the field, but the emotional load almost, I reckon, is a thing. Would that be a factor?
Yeah, certainly. I think we could be doing more in that space. You speak about Emil being young. That's almost a norm if you go globally.
Yeah.
When you're special players, there's nothing. I mean, I know Philadelphia Union played a 14-year-old.
Yes.
He broke the record last season, you know, for the youngest player to play in the MLS. Again, I think we could be doing more in the South African space. I don't think we believe in our youth enough.
No.
I think we need to get away from the fact that we're calling 23-year-old youngsters in this country, unfortunately. I just dealt with a player recently, because obviously that's the space I'm in now, where I manage, work for a company, we manage players. I have a 22-year-old turning 23, just signed, you know, with one of the big clubs. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the youngster. We have to manage the youngster. We have to look after him. It's a project. And are they talking about literally he's going to turn 23 soon. You're talking about a 23-year-old.
He's a grown man.
We can't be calling 23-year-olds youngsters anymore. And that's a problem in this country. So when there's a 17, 18, 19-year-old, we're keeping them, or we feel the need to protect them too much a lot of times. Where, like, if you're good enough, you're old enough. That's the bottom line. But managing the off-the-field stuff is so important, and I think we can be doing more in that space. And the living, like, you know, we have an 18-year-old we manage who's turning 19. He's playing first-team football at Sundowns. Again, he stays in the academy. But then I ask myself, you know, there's pros and cons to everything.
Yep.
It keeps him with his peers, you know, his age group. So he socializes with guys his age. But then...
He's a grown man.
But then, you know, he's playing with seniors. He's playing with grown guys. So is he a bit too childish in terms of what he's going to be doing on the field, how he conducts himself on the field? There, like I said, there's pros and cons to everything. Do we need to take him out of that environment so he can thrive in the space he's in? Or are we protecting him by keeping him in that environment? So those are all questions. And I think we haven't done enough with young talent to have gotten an answer yet, because the young talent we're seeing now is actually, it's like the first, this, if you look at what's happened in the past 2-3 years, we were never playing kids this young. Like when Rile Mofokeng came on the scene, and you know, there's so many, we'd have that odd youngster in the league, but now there's an influx of them. And I think it's still a teething phase where we're not quite sure how to manage them and what to do. And I think it's a learning process still for us.
And I just wanted to speak on that. You know, we've seen players like you, ex-players, Dr. Kumalo as well, has come out recently and saying, like, we need to put these youngsters in these big academies because they're all a bunch of these scouts coming out and saying, guys, we want to take them. In the past, and I don't want to be political about that, you know, we've got the big teams who tend to hold on to talent, and at their peak, they missed the window to go in, you know. And I think even in just talent development, we had, you know, I saw something talking about Kune being coming in super young as a protege goalkeeper, but staying at a Kaizer Chiefs for 15 years where you don't get the talent going through. So we don't see who Kaizer Chiefs' best number two is after that certain window of time. Mm. Do you think now that is going to change, or do we have to be more intentional about that, you know, with you know, you guys speaking out about stuff like this?
Yeah, again, I think people need to understand it's not as cut and dry as entering the European market or moving abroad. You speak about someone like Kune.
Yeah.
I think Kune probably never would have been able to play in Europe because he's not tall enough. Okay. So there's, you know, those kind of things. We look at a Ronwen Williams, the best goalkeeper in Africa right now. He should have been in Europe a long time ago. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, there are the limitations because of his height. And in Europe, they have checklists, literally. So you have to tick every box. You miss one, unfortunately. And it's especially hard for goalkeepers. And so you'll ask Darren Keat. Popeye will tell his story about how I think when he went to Belgium, he went on trial at Anderlecht. But he was 1 centimeter too short in his medical. And so they wouldn't, like, literally everything was done. They loved him. He was great. 1 centimeter too short. And that's how he ended up playing for one of the smaller teams in Belgium.
It's such a shame, because with his new hair, I'm sure he's an extra centimeter now. Darren, have another go, bud.
So, yeah. And then when it comes to outfield players, you speak about, yes, when you, like, we look at Rile Mofokeng.
Yeah.
The window is slowly closing for him because he's turning 21 this year.
Exactly.
And entering the European market, it's not always, and I'm not saying it's too late, but it gets harder and harder the longer he stays and if he doesn't enter. But again, it's not like back in the day where your Dalron Buckley's, Quinton Fortunes went when they were youngsters. Yeah. There's new rules now in place where FIFA, you're not allowed, if you don't have a European passport, you can't move abroad until you turn 18. But then now, the funny thing is we went on a conference, and clubs in Europe, they've got software where literally they get pinged every time a youngster starts. If a 16, 17, 18-year-old plays in a game anywhere, it's almost like, or plays a succession of games. It's like, okay, he's playing regularly at senior level, they get pinged. And that's when they start following and tracking the youngster, or whatever the case may be. We're not playing youngsters enough for them to get pinged at a 16, 17, 18-year-old. Because the business of football, I promise you, it's gone to a degree where everything gets looked at. So as soon as someone gets pinged, now they check everything. They go into your social media. They do their due diligence, because what our one club put it is, they basically said, look, if we're going to spend millions upon millions, we're going to invest thousands to make sure the millions are worth it.
Makes sense.
You understand? And so that's the thing with football. It's gotten to a degree where it is very much a business. And I don't think I've made enough strides to get close to what global trends are currently. Yeah.
So just on that, Mark, I mean, obviously, as you say, as a scout, as a coach, you've gone through all these different processes. So getting back to your original point, you see that kid who's just too good for his buddies.
Yeah.
Now, on the back of what you just said there, the guy needs to know what he's doing at the age of 16. When do you realistically actually say to a kid, like, from this stage, you must be getting your ducks in a row? You want the kid to express himself and develop naturally, but then professionalism has to happen. It's not like, finish school, you know what, I'm pretty good at this. Yeah. Let me kick on. Like age-wise, if you had to see a proper generational talent, when would you start implementing some of those kind of considerations?
I mean, it should have been – it starts – I mean, globally, we had Arsenal.
Yep.
We're in a conference. Per Mertesacker, head of development at Arsenal, comes, speaks. And this blew our minds. My colleague Ricardo Katza, we worked together. Per Mertesacker told us that they sign players at under 8 level.
Damn.
Under 8.
Arsenal are signing under 8.
What are they looking for?
you see the point I'm making. Like, yeah. So this is where... globally where they are, and we're so far behind. Yeah. So Arsenal, imagine you've got a six-year-old and Arsenal come knock on your door. They saw your kid playing in the park, yeah, wherever, whatever.
So a grown man comes to my door to watch my kid in the park.
Like, hey. But no, I mean, obviously they're playing organized football or whatever, but Arsenal come and they say, look, we want to sign your son. He's 6, 7 years old. He's going to play under 8. He's going to start at under 8. Now he's 6 years old. Let's just... for sake of numbers, 6 years old, he's going to be in the academy until he's 16. Everything you're talking about, they're implementing in that 10-year span. They've got 10 years. When they've recognized and they've identified the talent, 10 years between 6 and 16, they implementing everything you're talking about. Wow. And so how to handle yourself off the field, how to handle media, how to deal with fame, how to deal with whatever comes with that space.
Yeah.
It's implemented in that space. So they've got it, like, literally. So a kid in England has a 10-year head start already.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we get excited about when a 17-year-old runs on for Arsenal.
But meanwhile, it's like... 9.
No, it's a process.
A 9, you veteran. Stalwart.
Stalwart, yeah.
He didn't just arrive there. Exactly. He didn't just arrive there. So... imagine that. And where do you even go in South Africa to identify an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old for that matter? You understand? It's difficult. It's not the same. We play, and I guarantee you, the average South African footballer versus the average English footballer, there's no comparison.
They've been trained pro for a very long time.
No. I'm talking about natural ability.
Ooh.
Natural ability. The average South African footballer, take a kid off the street in South Africa and put him against any, like, his peers abroad. I guarantee you'll run circles around them. But what are we doing to harness that talent? We haven't put the system. We are so far behind. I mean, when you look at our clubs, I mean, one of our biggest institutions doesn't even have a development program. When we look at, you know, there's only so much space. Like, there's one Kaizer Chiefs, one SuperSport. We're limited.
Yeah.
For me, one of the big problems is our schooling system. Football is non-existent in our schooling system. I don't say non-existent, but it's not where it should be because so much talent falls through the cracks. So a kid in a rural area, there's no pro club or no real club he can play for, but he goes to school. And if his school had a proper system or a proper... you know, team that you could develop and you can learn from, at least, you know, we'd be unearthing more talent. So the pool of talent would be greater. But the reality is we have a few select programs that you can look to and say there's real. And the funny thing is the two best programs in the country. And when I say best programs, I'm in terms of output, are not aligned to any pro club. School of Excellence and Ubuntu in Cape Town. I don't know if you remember, they used to play NFD a while ago, but they now have an ABC Motsepe status, but they have a full-time program. They're a school as well. They have a private school and they house kids. So those kids have a dedicated training program. But when you look at output in terms of who's produced some of the top talent, Emil Witbooi.
Yeah.
is from School of Excellence.
Yeah.
Signed to Rile Mofokeng, School of Excellence. Kutlwano Letlaku is at Sundowns now, School of Excellence. I mean, the list is endless.
Yeah.
You look at a lot of the Cape Town, the boys that have made it in the Cape Town space are from that Ubuntu program.
Yeah.
So those are the two best programs in the country. But what have we done? Like School of Excellence. I know School of Excellence from my day. Mm-hmm. School of Excellence had a satellite program. Yeah. I was part of the satellite program. So my peers, Stephen Pinar, Brett Carlser, Dominic Isaac, Sean Potgieter, they were all at the school. And we had a satellite. And you should have seen those games. The matchup between the satellite program and the school.
Legendary game.
Those are games to talk about. Farooq Khan ran the whole thing.
Yeah.
So now you look at someone like Farooq Khan, the success he's had, yeah. Even what he's doing now with Stars of Africa.
Yeah.
They're people who, you know, they've been around the game for a long time. There's expertise we can call upon. But why don't we have a school of excellence in every province?
Resources, I guess.
Yeah. No. It's not about resource. It's about wanting to do the right things. I mean, we had a World Cup.
Yeah.
Post-World Cup, we should be flourishing in our football. We should be flourishing. What Morocco did in 2022, we should have done in 2018 already.
Yeah.
And I promise you, South Africa has the ability to be a power. Everyone should be catching up to us. We should be the front runners on the continent. And it's just a desire. It's a willingness to do right by the sport. I don't know if we have that.
Yeah.
And when I say we, I'm talking about the football fraternity as a whole.
Yeah. Mark, I just want to just pull you back into some of your playing days. You know, you've had a very storied career. You've played at some of the biggest clubs in the country. Tell me, we were started off with you coming and joining Jomo Cosmos. Can you just speak a little bit about Jomo Cosmos and then ultimately tell us the different journeys with the, you know, four or five clubs that, you know, at the high level you spoke about. I've also spoken about how you used to destroy Kaizer Chiefs, which seems to be coming up a lot on your highlight reel. I don't know if you've got an agenda against me, but just that, you know, just that journey of yours. And then I'm going to ask you a few more questions around, you know, the pregame rituals, which is something me and you have spoken about at length, but just your professional journey starting super early.
Yeah. Again, like when I came back from the US, from college, went straight into the first team setup. I'd already trained with them prior to leaving. So I was quite familiar with the players. They were familiar with me. And a lot of the guys that I left, well, in the under-19 space had now been promoted and were playing in the senior team. So it was a seamless transition into the senior team. And again, when I started at Cosmos, we were... I think my first two seasons, we finished fourth.
Yep.
And we won the Coca-Cola Cup and we won the SAA Super 8, I think it was at the time. So we were very competitive. We were extremely competitive. And I still believe we had to this day, I don't think there's a better eye for talent than Jomo.
Yeah.
If you look at history, I mean... Jomo, the 96 Nations Cup winning team, is littered with players that started their careers at Cosmos. And just throughout the years, you know, every team was littered with players from Cosmos, especially once they got relegated. I mean, no one's really struggled to find a team because Jomo, when it comes to talent, no better eye for talent. But unfortunately, from a coaching perspective, and I say this with all due respect, I think... It didn't quite, the game transitioned, the game.
And he didn't see it.
The game moved and the game, I think, left him behind a little bit.
Yeah.
And
don't
so.
You often see that with coaches who were players, like the spectacularly talented ones too. They don't really get
exactly.
Them.
We were talking about Thierry Henry, Frank Lampard.
Can't you do it like me? Can't you just be better?
Yeah, can't you just do it like I do? Yeah.
And Jomo used to get involved at training, eh?
Really?
There was a time, I mean, he would, and the funny funny thing with Braje, with a dead ball, he could bend the ball. I mean, he had a body on him at the time.
Yes.
But he would hit a no-look pass, like a switch the ball. You'd be turning it this way, be looking, and then he hits someone and finds him. he was still, we could see why he's, you know, considered among the best ever.
Yeah. Was he kind of our Diego Maradona then? Or was it like a different kind of talent?
No, he was special as well. And you don't have to go far. You can just ask him. He'll tell you. Because I remember going to his office once, and there's a picture of him on the wall, a newspaper article. And it was actually funny enough, the time they wanted me to turn pro when I was 17. Yeah. I was a striker as well at the time. So I go and I'm looking and I'm reading the article. And he says to me, "My boy, you see there, you're not even, don't even think you are anywhere near that guy there."
Yeah.
And he'll tell you about how when Pele left, he said, "No one else can wear the number 10, only Jomo. The number 10 is for Jomo."
Yeah.
That's like his, even Pele recognized his ability. So, yes, and we saw it at training. I mean, he was, you could see why he was considered so great. We never got to watch him. We see clips of him, but we never really got to see him in his heyday. But yes, that's where it started for me. And I spent 4 years at Cosmos. And so when I got to my fourth year, I just felt like I needed to go in order to grow. And it wasn't a smooth transition, because actually when I had 6 months left on my contract, they wanted me to renew. And I said, I said to Brajay, I'm not going to renew. I want to go and try something different. I want to move on. And then he was like, "Well, if you feel that way, then you need to go now." And I'm like, "Okay, but I'd really like to finish the season," because we were struggling at the time. I was the joint top scorer of the team with Chris Katongo. Yeah. And it wasn't much. I was like on 4 goals or something like that. But we were having a tough time because we were in relegation zone at the time. And I said to him, "I really want to, you know, see this through. I want to help the team." And he's like, I guess he felt that my heart wouldn't be entirely there if I'm not willing
to
recommit. Yeah, but the funny thing is he wouldn't sell me though, because then Swallows came in and Wits came in and they both wanted me. Yeah. But they wanted to buy me outright. And he just said, no, he wants a loan transfer, like a swap loan.
Yeah.
So I think he wanted Elias Bunjira from Wits. And I'm not sure who it was. I think it was Pizzo Licone at the time that he wanted to swap with. But he didn't want to do an outright, you know. And eventually I ended up going to Silver Stars.
Yep.
Ishmael Maluleka, he went the other way. And so I saw out my contract, my Cosmos contract at Silver Stars. But at the end, I got injured while I was at Silver Stars, unfortunately. So I didn't get to play too many games there. Played a couple, but not too many. So when that 6 months was over, I was basically a free agent. But when I say free agent, it's basically I didn't have a job. Then I reached out to Gavin Hunt. I reached out to a few people. Again, I got an agent in that time, which again...
Hold that. We're about to jump into that. Hold that. I think that's going to be an interesting conversation in terms of the business of football.
Yeah.
Because I think that is where a lot of talent struggles to now adjust into. Now they are the business of, you know, their product. How did you struggle with that? And you talk about the agent. And then before we get into that, I want to talk about your relationship with Gavin Hunt, because it seems that he changed a lot of, you know, where you projectedly went, you know, when you played in Wits and ultimately SuperSport. How was that relationship with you and Gavin Hunt?
Yeah, I mean, he signed me twice.
Yeah,
basically. So, I speak about like that period now where I didn't have a job, basically. I just got married. My son was born. So I was, in effect, taking a massive risk. Yeah. Well, I got married that December before that 6 months. Yeah. So I finished out my 6 months. My son was born not long after. And then now I find myself where I don't have a job. So I'm kind of I'm neither here nor there. Mm. But Gavin Hunt lives in the complex across from me. We had a townhouse we were renting. And he literally, and my cousin tells me he was there fixing his phone. So just by chance. Yeah. So eventually I do call him up and I have a meeting with him. And he says, "Look, you haven't been that active in the last 6 months. That's the business of football again." Even though he wanted to sign me already 6 months ago. Yeah. Like, "You haven't really been that active. So we have to see you. Are you still at the level?" All that kind of thing. But I know what that was about. That's basically, you can't come in and now demand huge numbers because we haven't seen you in a while. So So I had to go on trial, basically, at Swallows. In effect, I was on trial. So I went, first day of training, there was like, you know, a lot of guys on trial as well. They had just a lot of matches playing. But I think I gave a really good showing of myself. Greg Itafia immediately took to me. You know, he then automatically welcomed me and based on my game. And so it was I think, I wouldn't say a foregone conclusion, but, you know, it was going to happen. But I think they wanted them, they stretched it out so that I wouldn't get as good a deal as possibly I could have. That's, again, like I say, the business of football. The funny thing about that, after Gavin had already indicated that he wants me at the club, for some reason, it took long for my contract actually to get drawn up and for me to finalize. So the guy that was repping me, apparently he was asking for stupid numbers. I had no idea what he was asking for, because Gavin came to me and he's like,
"What's happening here now?
Your agent, you know, whatever." And this is a guy that I was like, literally someone said to me, "This guy's starting out, just give him a try." And again, you don't put your hands in your career in the hands of someone who's a novice. Yeah. And literally he did my deal and I never saw him again. And when I say never saw him again, I'm not even exaggerating to you. I signed a 3-year deal. I never saw the guy till today. I have no idea where he is. I know his Nike. Let me not say his name.
Yes.
But I never saw the guy again.
But you hear that kind of story quite often, though.
Yeah.
It's not a rare story, though.
But again, that's why. And, you know, no slight on the upcoming agent.
Yep.
But the reputation, track record, the way we do our due diligence with anything in life.
Yeah.
You have to do that with even with someone who's going to manage your career. And unfortunately, he did that. It's old news now, but it just blew my mind. And so I'm in that space now.
Yeah.
But my philosophy in life and my motto I live by is do unto others as you would have them do to me. So the way I manage and treat players is the way I would have wanted to be treated in my career. And so when I look at those kind of instances, I've said this to players that we manage now, like I've not once did, and I had three different agents in my career. Not once did I get a call from my agent to say, "Hey, you played well today," or "You weren't so good today. Let's talk about it. You know, what can we do better? How can we help you?
Yeah.
Do you need extra work?" Whatever. Yeah. But never once got a call from my agent to say, "Hey, I watched your game. You did well," or any kind of feedback. Wow. And it's ridiculous. Yeah. So, you know, that's why today I'm glad that I get to try and do better. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but at least I know, based on my experience, what I would have liked as from my agent. And so that's what you try. Yeah. Just back to the signing at Swallows. Gavin indicated he wanted me. Then they brought out, I was training with the team. It was just a matter of getting my contract done. They brought, but the management, for some reason, like, they were dragging their feet. And I don't know if it's because of my agent. It just took a long time. So at that point, sports science was a fairly new thing. And the only people really doing it were the guys in Newlands. So they fly the guys up from Newlands Sports Science and they come and do testing. So you do your beep test and then you do the 40-yard sprint, all those kind of things, you know, like your vertical and all those kind of things. So we did a 40-yard sprint and we don't know the results. But I end up being the fastest in the team. So Leon Prince is the owner of the team. And I always say, that's the crazy thing about my time at Swallows. He wasn't a football guy. He was a rugby guy.
Yeah.
And he was into horses and that kind of thing. But he was running Swallows. Yeah. And again, I'd say that, and it's no slight on him, but those are the realities that we faced. Mm. I was signed because my 40 time was almost his words to me. He says, "Hey, we must," because and he lived in Cape Town. So he was up in Joburg. He comes to me, like we're having a team meeting, whatever. And he's like excitedly comes to me. And I'm like, "Wait, what's going on now?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, we need to get this deal done, eh?" I'm like, "You guys have been dragging your feet all this time. And now you're like, you know," he's like, "Yo, I saw the results, eh? You're as quick as Brett Russell."
Damn.
So,
You were kind of quick, bro.
Never mind my ability on the field.
You saying
I'm as quick as Brett Russell, so now I must sign.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so like literally within a week I was signed.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, in that week, I did my ACL. So
definitely not as quick as Ben Russell anymore.
Yeah. At training, did my ACL, but we didn't know at the time. So I, you know, thing gets pops, whatever. The doc checks, he says, I don't think it's that serious. So we kind of manage it. You know, he's like, okay, I signed the deal. Deal is done. And eventually, you know, a week. So Gavin is away when this happens because he went to do his assessments for his coaching badges in Europe. He was doing his UEFA badge at the time. So he was away. It happens in training. And when he gets back, first, he gets back on the day of the first our first league match. And I'm not in the team, obviously, because I'm injured. And he's like, so what's happening with you? And by then, they'd sent me to a specialist. And he's like, that specialist, like, he literally took my knee and he just did this. And he's like, and very nonchalant, like 6 to 9 months.
I look
at him like, dude,
what do you
like,
mean?
Don't just, you know, like, and he literally just does this to my knee and he's like, 6 to 9 months. I look at him like, really?
Yeah.
But I promise you, the crazy thing about, and the body is such an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I could sprint in a straight line. I could go flat out, sprint, full on. No pain, like perfectly.
Yeah.
As soon as I try to turn, change direction.
That was it.
My leg would just give way and I would just drop like a sack of potatoes.
Jeez.
It's crazy how the body works.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, and because the thing is, they put me on a treadmill and I was going and they're like, how can your ACL be gone? But they put the speed like full. I'm going flat out.
But it's the turning.
As soon like we get on the field, I literally run. And you know, obviously football is football.
Yeah.
Change of direction is everything.
Every time, yeah.
So I turn and I just go.
Collapse.
And in my mind, like, even me, I didn't believe it could be gone, like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's every time that, like, just, And then eventually I had to go for surgery and, 6 months later.
Mark, we could get into so deep about that career. I just want to quickly touch on something that we've spoken about at length about the pregame rituals. Obviously, every coach and every team has different ones. I know some of them you can share, some of them you can't share. Please tell me the craziest one that you know about. I'll keep the ones that I know to my heart because I know you're going to feel weird about sharing it. But your craziest pre-game rituals for different coaches.
Well, I wouldn't say coaches necessarily because I think the coaches hardly ever get involved. I think it's more the clubs. Well, obviously, there's one club where the coach is the club and he is everything. So, there were some crazy things. So, I remember us being given some berries on the route to the game, jump off the bus at a four-way stop, put the berries down. You have to crush them. Back on the bus, let's go. the crazy thing, and then the same thing with eggs. Like, you get these eggs and then get to a four-way stop on the way to stadium, stop at a four-ways, go and break the eggs, and then we carry on. So we don't know if these eggs were prayed over. I can't tell you, whatever. But I've been hit with a Bible, or what I thought was a Bible before, where like literally every one of us, and that's a crazy thing. You can imagine a room full of footballers and someone just comes and just hits everyone, like just moves through. And you can't laugh. You can't. You have to like literally, you have to hold it in because you're jeopardizing your space in the starting lineup potentially. Yeah. There was one where a guy from Senegal.
Sorry, these are different teams?
No. This is all one team. Everything I'm saying now was one specific team.
He alluded to which team it was earlier.
There's one where we in like a change room. A guy from Senegal walks around the dressing room. He's got two live chickens. And then next thing he grabs one chicken and dips its head in some solution. I don't know what that is. And he just walks around the room and it's like he's praying. And then next thing we see the chicken is dead. So like, and then one of the guys starts laughing and the guy gets infuriated and then he just drops everything and he walks out and he storms out and he's, and the crazy thing is this is after we just had like a 2-3 hour training session and they ask us to go to the dressing room. Now we're sitting there waiting And then the guy storms off. Now he's not willing to do it anymore because he feels disrespected. Yeah. Meanwhile, we want to go home. And, you know, now what do we do? And then there's one where we literally had to go to a river. We're literally in, is it Galuli's area? Mm-hmm. There has to be flowing water, obviously. A goat was brought, sliced gallbladder, whatever. Now we have to kind of, with the river, the flowing water, gallbladder, you have to wash. That was where I drew the line. That's the one where I was like,
this is too much now.
Yeah, I'm not willing to, but eventually.
And these are just the teams that you were involved in. So there's other stories out there.
It's wild. It's apparently as wild with other teams.
The crazy
teams,
thing is, as players, we had names for most of the stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's even the one where, like, in Pepo.
Yeah.
Where there's the element of a kettle that boils, and I don't know what they put in it. You get in 4 or 5 at a time, and they put all these blankets on top of you. So you're steaming, basically. So you're under there, but like now we're fighting under there, moving the kettle around, shifting it because it's burning me here. Yeah. Crazy. And then there was kawash, what we used to call kawash, where there's a bath, there's water with stuff in it, and you have to go in there and whatever, you have to spray yourself. Then there was a bath of coffee. Get in the bath of coffee, wash yourself, whatever. At one club, a different club. You know what a safety belt is?
Yeah, I know what a safety belt is.
You know what a safety belt is.
Please break it down for my Caucasian brother.
I'm hanging up every single word you're throwing out here.
So, I don't know. It's someone's cultures and someone believes in that. I don't. But if you're in a team that this is what they do, you know, you go along with it, I guess. And this was in my younger days. Later in my career, I kind of stood my ground because of my religious convictions and what I believed. And I made it very clear there's certain things I won't do. But the safety belts, basically, it's a rope that they put around you and they tie on you. We had to play with those. Jeez. So you add it on for, like, you literally put it on before the game and on the field and you go out and play with it. But yeah,
it's crazy.
Sorry, my head is full.
The safety belt.
My head is full of things here. I'm like, wow, getting to game day must be crazy.
So, Mark, thanks for sharing those amazing stories with us. We're going to cut back and we're going to talk about the current PSL and this weekend's fixtures. Yeah, guys, we all need a little bit of a break. Let's get back into it.
All right, welcome back. I know it's a heavy football show today and I, for one, am loving it. I know it's not like my premier sport. You know this.
Yeah.
In Mark's world. I mean, Mark. We've got to get him back to unpack a few more of these things. But this weekend, of course, we've got the Six Nations, okay? So it's the final round. And as you said at the top of the show, mathematically, 3 teams can win. Ireland could win, but they have to rely on England and France slipping up. So let's go with no there. But they'll take on Italy. So let's have a look at the log, because then we all know where we're standing. So you see that Ireland are on 14, they get to 19 at best. But then that just means that England needs to just win. And if France win, they're unassailable. So I like to keep it at the top 2 there. The first game is going to be Italy versus Ireland. Let's go straight past that. If Wales can sort of stymie England, then again, the ball's in France's court. If England get the 5 points, they get to 20 points. Then it comes down to France. Now, their points difference is immense. So they literally just need to win against Scotland. A bonus point win for France gives them the trophy. All done. But Scotland, they took England close.
They did.
They got hammered against Ireland and all that Scottish fervor, whatever. If there was ever a time, Scotland, that you need to come out and produce the game of your life, it's a pretty good one this weekend, huh?
But then you know what Scotland going to do. They're going to choke. Yeah.
But would Scotland want to do it? I mean, that would be doing England a favor.
Well, this is the other point.
So, yeah. I mean, I think they'd rather France win it than England.
So they'll give it a good go. And the first half of that match is going to be spirited. But ultimately, I think France, even without DuPont, they're just going to steamroll in there. We need to get into the Betway Prem. Yep. Now, there was a couple of interesting results earlier this week. Pirates have Arsenal themselves out of the log.
They're done. And once again.
And you know what? I'm not just being negative. If you bring up the log, I think we can actually have some perspective on this.
Yeah. So once again, and Mark, I want to get your input on the league. So far, we're getting to the business end of it. Are there some teams that you're surprised at? And once again, Mamelodi Sundowns dominance. But tell me, what do you think about the Premier League, the PSL this season?
I think it's been great. You want Pirates to get the 12 points in that the four game, games in hand that they, because we don't want
a runaway league,
canter into the title for Sundowns. I've always said since the beginning of season, I said Sundowns are still going to win the league. I don't think anyone is close enough, especially when it comes to squad depth. I think that's the one thing Pirates are lacking is squad depth to compete. I didn't want it to be a 23-point difference again. And at this rate, if Pirates, don't get their form back, we could see, again, a canter to the title for Sundowns. The most surprising and the one that people need to keep an eye on is SuperSport. Mm. SuperSport are struggling to win games. Did you see where they sit on the log?
Except against us.
I mean, obviously, that's the one thing. I think
SuperSport currently on 13th place, right?
13th place. That's only 2 points above the relegation zone. I mean,
it's 2 points from bottom.
Yeah.
Gallants, well, bottom is obviously Royal AM. There's Royal AM. But I see it's good that you've cut them off because we have no idea what's happening with them.
Yeah.
Gallants are 19. Have shown a bit of form. I mean, they got close to beating Sundowns. The other day they beat Pirates.
Yeah.
They weren't great in the cup over the weekend, but if you look at Magezi won against Richards Bay yesterday. SuperSport lost, but look at their Golden Arrows 21, Richards Bay 21. So it's going to be very tight there. And SuperSport, a former three-time champion, are very much in trouble.
And legendary coach as well.
Based on their form, you worry about them because if they were playing well, and we saw the game against Chiefs. I mean, they did very well in that. They raised their level for that game, but then yesterday they contrived to lose again, 3-1 against Galaxy, I think it was.
Yeah.
So where are SuperSport right now? They are struggling to score goals, struggling to win games, and if they don't get their act together, they could easily find themselves in trouble because the other guys are used to fighting relegation.
Yeah.
So the other guys know what it is.
They built for
that. To be in that position. Yeah. And so the players at SuperSport, especially, they got a lot of youngsters. It might be challenging for them.
Just on that whole thing with Royal AM, I know you must have been asked about it so many different times and you've spoken about it so many different times. But what is the story there? I mean, I remember when I first saw them come into prominence. Just here in Sandton, there's this massive house.
Yeah.
And they're sort of building pillars and like there were statues going up. And then there was this massive Royal AM here in Sandton.
Yeah.
There's this house. I
can tell you the story. It's
just came up. So from your side.
You should see the house in Durban.
You should see the compound in Durban. Yeah. So Ben, and it's a tax related issue. I don't want to mention the person's name, but everybody knows Sean Mkhize is going through a lot of things right now. And basically the tax man took Royal AM. What's unfortunate about that is that they took Bloom Celtic's license. And
they bought it. They bought
Bloom Celtic. So ultimately a lot of legacy has been lost throughout that. And it looks like it's going to tank this year.
But there is talk that State Consortium is looking to get the status back and kind of try to revive Bloom Celtic.
Yeah.
So they've lost their club basically. Mm. What do you say, curatorship?
They're under curatorship.
Yeah. So Sardis owns the club right now, and the club is for sale. I think this week is actually, they took bids this week. Apparently, you had to put down R1 million.
To jump bid. In.
Just to show
to jump in for your bid. You had to, like, it's a refundable million, but you had to put down R1 million to put in a bid. Royal AM, the problem started for them when they were handing out bonuses on the field.
Cash
from
money.
An envelope. Like, who does that? Like, why would you do that? And in that moment, I felt for the players because I think like a player. I'm a former player.
Yeah.
Nobody, like, who wants to receive on TV, be seen, you handed a stack of money on national TV? It's wrong. You can't do that. It's disrespectful to the players, to the game. You're just already there. Because how do you account for that?
But that's also how you get Sars's attention pretty quickly.
Exactly. That's where they, and literally, because I didn't understand it at the time. Someone actually, I was watching the incident with someone, and they're like, they're opening themselves up.
Well, yeah.
And clearly, like a couple of years later, exactly as was said. And so, respect the game. For me, it's just respect the game.
Yeah, you have to. So Friday's fixtures, AmaZulu versus TX Galaxy, 7:30. Royal AM are fixtured to be with SuperSport United. So like teams coming up against them now, are they just getting the points?
No, they just, the game is pretty DNP, much yeah. said to be postponed. So again, that's the tricky thing now. Whoever, because I think they've only played 11 games. Yes. Everyone else is on the 20-game mark. They're on 11 games currently. So how are they going to catch up all those games?
Well, they can't. So then the tricky thing would be, okay, no. So if you've played Royal AM when they were actually a team, envelopes and all, do your points then change to be consistent with everyone else who can't play them?
If they're not able to finish the league, they would have to scrap
all those wins.
All
Royal AM games. So if you won against Royal AM, you're minus 3 points. If you drew, you're probably happier. If you lost to them, even more so, whatever. Yeah. But that's normally what would happen. Yeah. I say that, but that's what happens in the lower leagues, in your SAB. And so if you've played against a team that now falls out of the league, everyone who's played that team,
minus the point.
We just disregard those results. Those results fall away. Okay. So
does it change the relegation battle? Would there be considered as a team that would have gone down?
Those are all the permutations that I have to take into account. Oh, because, yes, now, like, do you relegate 15 and 14? You know, it's normally 16, 15 goes to playoff.
Yeah.
Do you just keep now, like, the 16 slot just is taken by the team that wins the first division? The Motsepe Foundation Championship, and then 15 still goes into the playoff. We don't know.
SuperSport, you've heard it here. You better win some games. That's what you know. You could be going down.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a whole host of fixtures just to run through them for the Saturday. Magesi versus Golden Arrows will be at 3:30. Cape Town City also not doing so great in the log, despite some blips of goodness in the season. They take on Galatz at 3:30. Tipi United Polokwane City at 8:00.
The funny thing about that, people often make this mistake. When you say blips, people associate a good season with beating Chiefs and Pirates. That's the reality in our league.
Yeah.
If you beat Chiefs and Pirates, you should win the league. I remember being at Swallows and like there was a season we beat Chiefs, Pirates, and Sundowns. And people are like, you guys should have won the league. And I'm like, those are the easy games. Honestly, when you look at and I'm a footballer. I love playing.
Yeah.
So the easy games is the games you're gonna play.
Yeah.
You're gonna look for the ball, but you're gonna get a chance to play as well because the bigger teams didn't press as much because they were footballing teams. They wanted to play. They were luxury footballers. So when they get the ball, they keep it.
Yeah.
But they weren't aggressive and like hassled you when you won it. Back then, the pressing game wasn't as hectic as it is now. No. Now it's different. But those were the easy games, the enjoyable games. Go to Free State Stars and go and win at Free State Stars.
Pitch the whole game.
A wet night against Santos or Hellenic back when they were in the league or Cape Town, Ajax Cape Town.
Yeah.
Those are tough. Go to Limpopo and go in the heat. Yeah. Go and win there. Those are the tough games. So beating Chiefs and Pirates, like now we say Cape Town City, they beat Chiefs and Pirates back to back. And so everyone's like, oh, they had a good season, you know? But the reality is they've been shocking. And that's why Eric Tinkler, I guess, before Eric Tinkler left, and they haven't lived up to expectation. And then, obviously, Etugral came in, won the two games against Chiefs and Pirates. Oof. But since then, there hasn't been much to speak of.
Yeah, exactly. Sunday's actually the really, really big day here, if we want to focus on that, because Chiefs over here, on a hot run, they're away to Richards Bay at 3:30. Pirates versus Sundowns at 3:30. Yes, as much as I've said that Pirates have Arsenal themselves to get those 12 points that Mark spoke about here in the games in hand, I mean, it is kind of a must win. I know it sounds very salacious to say it, but it is kind of a must win.
Yeah. I mean, that game has been moved to FNB Stadium.
Just so they get the extra tickets, yeah.
No, it's not, again, it's
demand,
Yeah, the demand around the game and all the other stadiums, traveling in and out is a little bit harder. When you expecting a full house there. Yeah. So I think that one's going to be, it's no less than a must win for Pirates.
Yeah. And then Sekhukhune versus Stellenbosch. English Premier League.
Do we still care?
Do we still care? I mean, I know Liverpool lost in the Champions League, which is going to give me lots of joy for the next 3 weeks while I give James shit about that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if we look at the log, like you said last week, the top four placing I think is quite interesting. Arsenal got a tough one against Chelsea this weekend, whereas Nottingham Forest have Ipswich.
Yep.
So you could think Nottingham Forest are going to go to 54. Arsenal could somehow throw that and then be on 55. So then suddenly there's a 1-point gap on there. But then Chelsea, Man City, Newcastle,
that's going to be
Brighton, Aston Villa, they're all in sort of touching zone of that fourth spot there. Yeah, like, I'm excited about that. But just to wrap up for this weekend, the Grand Prix's back. So that's Australian one, Grand Prix, Oscar Piastri, the Aussie, just signed a new multi-deal with McLaren. The guys are going to be very confident, of course. Those are the two guys, him and Lando. They tested pretty well. They won the Constructors' Championship last year. And then we've got the Players' Championship, golf's best field on one of the toughest, most well-known
golf courses. Just going to... And we have Lewis's first race under Ferrari, guys. I knew my boy Ben really wanted to move on to golf.
I was keeping it Australian, sorry.
Yeah. Guys, everybody's going to tune in at 6 o'clock in the morning to see how Lewis runs in this Ferrari. Yeah, a lot of hype. It's going to be probably one of the most exciting, you know, first races. So let's see what Lewis is
doing. Like season in general, because, you know, Mercedes, as we keep talking about, everyone's written them off, but they'll do well under the radar. The dynamic with Lewis and Charles, who knows? And then Red Bull's Red Bull. Yeah, like suddenly McLaren.
We've got another driver, guys. Everyone rest assured, Checo's gone into the abyss. let's go with our second driver. Let's go, Max. Let's go make this a legendary run.
Yeah. All right. Guys, we've got to wrap it up there. Mark, it's so great having you in the studio because we see so much negativity sometimes with the PSL, or it just falls into the shadows of Champions League, English Premier League. Everyone talks about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But as you say, like, there's a world of stuff out there. We've got to appreciate that the game is game. I mean, and just from the kind of stories that you had today, just show there's so much going on with these teams. There is so much to enjoy as well.
Definitely. I think we understate, and we have a long way to go to reach our full potential. But we still have a great product. We have a great, great product. And if you look at, especially I love teams like Stellenbosch. For me, Stellenbosch is my favorite organization in the league. If you look, and yes, people speak about, the Stellenbosch money, so-called Stellenbosch money. It's not a case of they have a blank checkbook.
Yeah.
But the way they run the club, they've set a great precedent for everyone else, the so-called smaller clubs. Because even if you look at the way they buy and sell, how they do their business. They didn't sell Ikram Reyners until they had a replacement.
Yeah.
Jaden Adams was sold. They had a replacement. Just the way they do business. They a great club and one of my favorite clubs to engage with. But just overall in the league, if you look at people running on shoestring budgets but making it work, it's not easy. Like when you look at football, there's no return on investment. And so we have to give credit to the people who are investing, spending their money. And a lot of times, why can't clubs do this? Why don't they do that?
Money.
Yeah. Like, we have to be realistic. I mean, SuperSport United, maybe even if you look at them, what's their situation? Why have they had to sell all their best players? There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go down every team. We have a long way to go. But there's so much we can be proud of. And again, people are investing a lot of money without seeing any return. And so we have to give them credit as well. And they're keeping football alive.
Yeah.
And then to the supporters, I think, they're a treat in themselves.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's maybe there's always going to be comparisons to how rugby is run and how cricket is run and the differences in the organizations, and a lot will be said. But at the end of the day, we have a thriving product and I think we can only get better. But I think it does need corporate as such to really come and find ways to invest and find ways to improve the game and grow the game. Because I honestly believe that we are top three. We could be a top three nation, not on the continent, globally. We have the talent. If you look at natural ability in South Africa, just pure ability, we can be a top three nation globally.
Right, guys. That was us.
We got to finish off with a poll.
Oh, sorry. I almost cut Ben there.
You know, last week we had the big travel show. Yeah. So we had a poll last week on X. Thanks for the ones who did vote on that. We gave you four options of which of the live sports events would you most want to attend. FIFA World Cup, 11%. F1 of your choice, 27%. Wimbledon Final, 27%. And Summer Olympics came out as the most wanted to be attended event, most desired attended event.
I get it. But they're lying about the World Cup final. Guys, come on, be better when you guys vote. That's us, right?
Well, we do have a poll this week, of course, where you can redeem yourself.
Butchering what I'm doing today. Go ahead.
So this week on the poll, we have who is winning the Champions League this season? Is it going to be Real Madrid? Is it going to be Barcelona? Could it be Bayern? Or have you got another team, Arsenal?
I knew you were going to try to sneak in Arsenal there.
Go on to @TRN on the bounce on X and you can vote in our poll for those three teams or in other. Of course, state your other as well for extra points. That's it for the week.
Okay, guys, that was us. Episode 39 of On the Bounce. Once again, Mark, thank you for all the stories. And yes, guys, next week, let's do it again.